Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Howie Hawkins. He's the Green Party candidate for mayor of the city of Syracuse, an election that will be held this November. Howie has run for local, regional, and statewide offices in the past, and he's currently employed by UPS. Howie, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here.
So, as I just mentioned, you've run for many offices on the Green Party ticket before. Why are you running this time?
Well, the Green Party has a program for the city, and this is the top-line race. So one thing we've learned over the years is we should have a good candidate in those races. So this is the best opportunity to put our program forward. And given my electoral results in recent elections and city council races, I've got over 40%, as high as 48% mm-hmm. three times. I got 35% citywide running for city auditor 2 years ago. So we see this as a competitive race. I could win it.
Well, let me take that possibility and let me take the other possibility first, which is if you don't win. Because, again, as a third-party candidate, you know, the odds are always going to be against you there. But let's say you don't win. What two or three issues are you most hoping to move the dial on here in the city?
Well, the first one is the city's facing insolvency. There's a structural deficit in the operating budget of about $15 million a year. So we need progressive tax reforms so we can get the revenue, broaden the tax base, and make it more fair. So we're calling for a city income tax. That would be a tax on income earned in the city by both residents and commuters. And our back-of-the-envelope estimate is that could raise about $30 million with an average tax rate of 1%. So that more than covers the operating deficit. Second thing is the state should pay for its mandates, its unfunded mandates. It should restore revenue sharing to its former levels. It's been frozen for 8 years and is projected to be frozen for the next 5 years. So we are paying for programs the state imposed. They should pay for them. And I believe the next mayor could lead a coalition of upstate towns and municipalities, Democrats and Republicans. I got a good response to the call for revenue sharing from Republican town board members all over the state when I was running in 2014. So that's the first thing, progressive tax reform to deal with the deficit. Second thing is, you know, my goal is to uplift poor and working class people in the city, and that will help retain and attract middle-class people and businesses. And so the quickest way to begin to alleviate the poverty is to make sure people in the city, residents and minorities in particular, have get their fair share of city-funded jobs in city departments and with city contracts. We have an equal employment opportunity program on the books, but it hasn't been monitored or enforced. And that goes back to 1973, that ordinance. It needs to be updated and enforced. And then the third thing is, I think we need to, instead of give tax breaks to absentee owners, private developers, largely for upscale development, we should target our economic incentives to the most disadvantaged communities, and particularly toward worker co-ops, where the income and wealth that those enterprises generate stay with the workers in those enterprises, and that uplifts people who are working, instead of them just getting a wage, often minimum, and all the profits going outside the community.
So let me dive a little bit deeper into a couple of things that you mentioned there. Let me take the proposal for the income tax first. That has come up before, and the current mayor, Stephanie Miner, I think if I recall correctly, on a previous program where this had come up, she had characterized that as something that would hurt the jobs in the city, that it would have a damaging effect net. But that would obviously be a concern at some level, whether we locate it in her or not, for a new kind of tax, that it would somehow provide disincentives for locating jobs in the city. Do you have that? How would you respond to that?
I think it's utter nonsense.
Okay.
The city in New York that has had the most job growth is New York City, which has a income tax that's slightly progressive of about 3%. For a business, it doesn't come off their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deduction off the wages or salaries of their employees. The best jobs, the best paying jobs, are in the universities and hospitals here on University Hill or downtown. The hospitals and universities aren't leaving town. They're the economic engine. Now, commuters who come to the city and make a nice salary here don't pay for the services they use. You know, roads, fire, police, you know, all the city services. So they should make a contribution. And municipal income taxes, about half the states have them. Very conservative Republican states like Indiana and Kentucky, that's a primary source of revenue for municipalities. And they're not losing jobs because of their income taxes, which, you know, at the municipal level are very low. So I don't think that's really an issue.
And in the same vein, a little more generally, on the issue of business development and trying to revitalize or further vitalize the city, building on some of the things that have already been done, that takes organizations and people willing to invest money in it. So how would you try to advance that and to bolster that up? I can hear in what you're saying how the benefits of those things might be distributed in a more equal and, one might argue, fairer fashion given the things that you're talking about. But just in terms of bringing the investments in, how would you go about trying to do that?
Well, if you look at why businesses locate where they do, they want to be close to their markets. They want a reliable labor force. They want good infrastructure, whether it's broadband or sewers. And about the last thing is they look at taxes. In fact, studies show that often businesses decide where they're going to locate, and then they'll tell that city, and then they'll start a phony bargaining with a couple other cities. Like they'll go to Syracuse, Youngstown, Ohio, and Scranton, Pennsylvania, and they'll say, what kind of deal can you offer me? But they already know where they want to go for other reasons.
Mm.
And so we get bargained down and giving out all these tax breaks, and that really isn't the incentive that brings people here. So what you want is good schools, good infrastructure, well-educated workforce, low crime. So you improve the quality of life in the city, and the city becomes a good place to do business.
And then businesses then presumably would – more businesses would want to locate there is your argument then.
Yeah, it's a positive feedback. You know, it's, you know, like when Chattanooga set up municipal broadband and it became, you know, higher, faster, but more affordable than most other cities, which were operating under these telecoms, which were kind of using their position as monopolies to overprice and underserve, they got a big boom in economics. So providing good infrastructure and – in that case, I think we should look at our basic utilities, including public power and broadband, as things that we ought to have public utilities that operate at cost, not for profit, and lower the cost of living and doing business in the city.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Howie Hawkins, Green Party candidate for Syracuse City Mayor. Well, the things that you've been talking about, by and large, are fairly ambitious changes, I think, to make to the way the city is currently doing its business. So let's say that you win, and as mayor, you try to move the dial on those particular policy areas, but, you know, you can't. You can't get all of the things that you want to try to do. What more specific and doable kinds of things, politically doable policies, would you pursue to bolster the city's finances and to stimulate the financial vitality of the city and to try to make the city fairer in the ways that I think most Greens want to see it become?
Well, I think the things I've outlined are politically doable. I think most of the Democrats, it's almost all Democrats in elected office, are progressive-minded. And over the years, the Greens have raised issues like living wage, like public power, which those Democrats have said, yeah, that's a good idea. They didn't want to push it themselves, but once it became like when I ran for mayor in 2005, people were suffering under rate shock from, at that time, Niagara Mohawk. And I pointed out that next door in Solvay, which has a public power utility, they're paying one quarter what we are in rates. And people said, wow, yeah, why don't we look at that? And pretty soon, you know, Joni Mahoney and Matt Driscoll were saying, well, if Howie's numbers are right, we should look at it.
Mm.
So I think these things are politically possible. And if we don't make some basic changes, the city is going to go in the direction it's been going, which is increasing concentration of poverty, a declining tax base, and flight by the middle class from our schools, which I think we have good teachers and good programs for the most part, but you bring a lot of poor people, kids, into schools, and you get all the problems of poverty in those schools, and they become struggling. And, you know, one of the issues I think is really important. The next mayor should really, they don't run the schools, but they should put the question of desegregation on the table. You know, Martin Luther King came to Syracuse in 1965 and said, you know, de facto segregation is growing in the North. And if we don't do something about it, we're going to doom generations of children to poor educations. And that's exactly what's happened. And where we have had integration, like Raleigh, North Carolina, Wake County, or Louisville and Jefferson County, which is an example of, or a model for consolidation that people around here often point to, what happens when you have integration is the poor kids, the achievement gap closes for the most part. And actually, the middle-class kids do a little better, too, in achievement. Mm. So, you know, everybody say in the suburbs, well, our schools will be ruined. No, their schools will actually get better, and the city schools certainly will. So I think that's an issue that the next mayor should be making sure this broader, greater Syracuse community addresses. The Consensus Commission said in July they'd set up something on schools, or this community should, but I haven't heard anything about that. And so I'm afraid that issue's going off the table. So one of the things a mayor can do is make the community address a basic question like that.
And thinking about how you would try to influence Albany from being the mayor of Syracuse, as a third-party mayor, how would that affect your ability to try to get Albany to pay attention to some of the things that you'd want it to be looking at in order to help the city?
Well, I think two things. One is if I am elected as a third-party mayor, Albany's going to take notice. They're going to say, what's going on politically here? Is this going to happen somewhere else? What's this guy want? And so I think we'll get their attention. And then I think, like I mentioned on the question of state revenue sharing, I believe a coalition can be built that is, you know, tripartisan and across upstate, because all the municipalities are having fiscal distress.
Let me jump in on that. I wanted to ask you that before, and I didn't. Why do you think that hasn't happened already? Because there's a lot of frustration in each city and in a lot of different towns and villages about that issue. So why hasn't that already taken place?
I think the Democratic mayors of the big cities are afraid of confronting Cuomo. And nobody's taken the initiative to organize the towns.
Well, not this mayor being afraid to confront Cuomo. Why hasn't that led to something?
Not on so much on policy. I mean, when she called Cuomo out, she was basically saying, I'm sticking my neck out here for some reforms to mandates. But she was talking about labor law reforms, like the Triborough Amendment to the Taylor Law. And both she and Cuomo hinted that they wanted to remove the Triborough Amendment, which basically says if a contract expires, it continues until a new one is negotiated. And the other side of that compromise is that public workers can't strike. They want to get rid of the Triborough Amendment, but not the bar on public workers striking, which is the Taylor Law. So that wasn't the difference. The difference was she wanted Cuomo to take the lead and come out publicly like she had. And Cuomo didn't like that. So that was more about style and how you relate to people, not on the policy substance. Look, the model for getting state revenue sharing in the first place was Mayor Lindsay, a Republican in New York, Mayor Alexander in Syracuse. I think the Rochester mayor was Republican, the Buffalo mayor was Democrat, and the Yonkers mayor got together. And at first, Rockefeller said, no, go to Nixon. He's doing revenue sharing. And they persisted, and they made a big public campaign. And by June of that year, Rockefeller was, behind the revenue sharing as if he had thought of it. I think that kind of coalition can be built. And I think it'll start with the towns in the rural and suburban areas until the Democratic mayors feel they got the political cover to join in.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Howie Hawkins, Green Party candidate for Syracuse City Mayor. The election will take place this November. You have an alternative to the Consensus Commission's proposal for a metropolitan form of government for Onondaga County. Could you briefly outline that?
Yeah, it's based on two principles, federalism and proportional representation. Federalism means the towns, which in the consensus proposal actually remain, but the city doesn't. We should keep our local governments. And it's a constitutional question of what things do you put at the county level or, you know, greater metropolitan government level, and what things remain in the communities, like planning and zoning within a countywide land use framework. I think that's more sellable to the voters to get the advantages of consolidation, which really are better services and infrastructure. The money savings are questionable. And people want their town government. I think the city should have neighborhood governments as well as citywide government where they can – the government's close to them and people can have good access to public services. And then the proportional representation means that every party, every political tendency gets representation in the county legislature or metropolitan government council in proportion to the vote they receive. Well, what the consensus proposal offered was another version of winner-take-all. Winner-take-all elections means the plurality wins, the minorities get nothing, and it magnifies the plurality or small majority into an overwhelming power. So take the county legislature as it's now constituted, even though the Democratic enrollment is greater than the Republican 3-2 because of gerrymandering the Republicans did, it's 13-4 on the county legislature, and those four Democrats have no power whatsoever. What you want is every interest in the community represented in the legislature, and if it's a multi-party system, then the beggar thy neighbor, winner-take-all bickering between the two parties goes away because you've got to build coalitions across three or four parties. So it creates a more representative. Everybody gets representation in proportion to their support. It's full and fair representation. Proportional systems tend to give better representation to ethnic minorities and women and political minorities. And so, you know, like I got 48% running for city council one time. The Greens have never had any power in the city government. So that 48% in my district got nothing. And the way the consensus proposal would work is basically you'd have the suburban and rural majority dominating the people that live in the city. And that's a race and class division that is not a good solution to the problems that metropolitan government could solve, which I think are desegregation, ecological planning like the land use plan, and more democracy.
So in your alternative, would you have a separately elected executive, or would that executive come out of this proportional, which I assume would be somewhat more parliamentary kind of system that you'd have?
I could go with either one, but I would say the executive officers of the metropolitan government, like now we have a comptroller, a clerk, and a county executive, should be elected by ranked choice, instant runoff voting. So you rank your choices, 1, 2, 3. And it's as easy as 1, 2, 3 for the voter. And then the way it works is if nobody gets an absolute majority in the first round, you eliminate the last place candidate, transfer their votes to their second choices, and continue that process until you get the most preferred candidates who has a majority of the votes.
That is a complicated system to describe, but I will just say as a maybe half editorial comment, a lot of political scientists like that.
The state of Maine just voted for it in referendum, although mm-hmm. they got a constitutional problem. It's obscure going back to the 1800s. A number of cities in the West Coast and the upper Midwest have adopted it recently. So for the voter, you just rank your choices 1, 2, 3, and it's easy.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is Syracuse mayoral candidate Howie Hawkins. You mentioned policing before. What big changes would you want to bring to the way that policing in the city works?
Well, first of all, I question the number of officers we have. I've looked at statistics comparing comparably sized cities, and we're almost double the number of officers per residence of other cities our size. I just saw in the Albany Times Union another study that compared Albany and Syracuse and Buffalo, and that study said we had I can't remember the ratios, but we had substantially more mm-hmm. officers per resident than those other cities. And if you want to reduce crime, crime prevention is often a more cost-effective way, youth jobs and recreation, intensive working with those most at risk, you know, gang members, people coming back from incarceration. I want to draw from the model of Richmond, California, where a green mayor actually implemented this program, along with community policing. So the officers are walking a defined beat, getting to know the residents and the businesses, and dealing with problems before they get out of hand. And they reduce their murder rate. This is a city of 100,000, working class, 80% people of color, that was consistently over 40 And it's about 100,000 people, so it's about two-thirds the size of Syracuse. A higher murder rate than we had last year, which was a record for us. And they reduced that over the 8 years of this Green Mayor's term of office with this community policing and intensive crime prevention programs down to 11. So that's the approach I want to take to policing. And I also want to see a strong citizen review board with the right, you know, with the resources to have investigators to follow up on problems.
Would that review board have decision-making authority or regulatory authority over the police, or would it be more of an advisory role in the way it is now?
I want to look at that. I think we need better reporting on what discipline is put out for officers that violate people's rights. We often don't know. What they did in Richmond is they actually took the investigation. They have a citizen review board. They also have an Office of Professional Ethics inside the mayor's office, not at police headquarters, that does the investigation, makes recommendations to the police chief, who does make the final disciplinary decision. I think we need to look at that model, too.
And I want to try to squeeze a couple questions in here at the end. We don't have all that much time, but briefly, what's your position on I-81? I know that you have made this case in greater length, but for our purposes here, where are you on I-81?
The same position I had when I ran in 2005 for mayor is tear down the elevated highway and rebuild the 15th Ward as a residential and commercial neighborhood that is mixed income, mixed use, well served by public transportation.
And the community grid then as at least the street that replaces it,
yeah,
so to speak?
Yeah, the old 15th Ward street grid.
Okay. And then the last question, we just have about a minute left. It's a little quirky, but it's something that your bio suggests to me. The bio that is attached to you always says that you attended Dartmouth College but stopped short of a degree. So I'm curious, why did you stop short of a degree? What happened?
I got involved in the anti-nuclear movement. I was in the Marine Corps and waiting to see if they're going to call me up on active duty after having gone through training at Quantico. So it was a confusing time, and I actually applied for what's called a senior fellowship, which is a year-long study. And at the last minute, they gave it to me, but they said I had to learn Spanish. And I flunked Spanish in the second quarter. And I finished the senior fellowship, and we occupied Seabrook. And then I had student loans I had to pay, so I had started, you know, working full-time in construction. And just never went back to get it.
So we got to get you back to that Spanish class one way or another then. That was Howie Hawkins. Howie, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.